On this Monday, the 25th of October of the year 2021, from Los Angeles, California, in the Lucy Coleman studio, right here on Harcourt Avenue, where this studio has always been for all these years. I'm PJ. I call myself the Internet Pastor because I no longer pastor a church. I resign from that. I no longer teach philosophy. I resign from that. But I have not resigned from humanity, the culture. And what I'd like to speak about today is a very important subject matter, and I think that you might find it quite interesting, not only quite interesting, but that you are able to correspond with it, to agree with it. I'm going to talk about religion, but I'm not going to talk about it the way I experienced it. As a matter of fact, I have just watched and listened to, and I don't do this often. I really don't. Nor do I talk about this in the way that I'm going to speak about the sermon that I just watched myself preach. Let me pick up the DVD. I just got through finished watching a sermon that was filmed by, Garland Gayden had the custody of this piece. And it's from the Anselm Bible Church, A Mighty Message, Into the Word Ministries. And the date was August the 23rd, 2006. And it was, I guess you can call my type of ministering, preaching, if you will. But the lecture was taken from Psalms chapter 51 verses 1 through 17, but trust me, I only quoted that at the last 2 minutes of the sermon, and the other scriptures that filled this this time slot. It was called Paradoxical Lives. That's what I called it, Paradoxical Lives. And it's such a masterpiece to me after listening to it, because it defines today who I am in the year 2021. Especially because of what I'm going to talk about, the kinds of things that I want to talk about, and the reason why I want to talk about it. I want to share a little bit. Waiting on God is what the theme is today. And I just listened to Paradoxical Lives that I preached August of 2006. And I watched me preach it. See, you have to understand what PJ, with me, what I'm going through now. I'm an elder. I'm a senior. And my life is a paradox because the passions that I had while I was a young man are still alive and still operating in me. And as I watched this sermon that I preached, and as I wait to share with you why I typed on here, Waiting on God, it happens in an instant. I said. Because at the end of this sermon, that's what I said. I said, if you just do this, instantly your lives can be transformed, I was telling the people. And I was amazed that at being a preacher as I am, that it yet moves forward. It yet moves my life forward. It happens in an instant. There is nothing to be done on your behalf. If you're waiting on God, you don't have to do anything. God is already responding to you. And this is beautiful when you look at it. Our lives have been orchestrated from the beginning, from before each of us being born. God in his majestic mind. Now, what I'm doing is I'm painting this picture of Jehovah God, and so that you could understand him in the human sense. We're in these bodies. We're on this planet. The sun just broke clear today. It was pouring down, raining all day, and the sky just opened up. The clouds went away. The sun is shining. It's about 1 minute after five in the early afternoon, and it's beautiful in Los Angeles. All the smog is washed away. I didn't hear about any floods or any fires. It's all well. It is beautiful. Now, having said all of that, God orchestrated this moment for it to be here. There's one aspect that I really appreciate about spiritual matters. If I do what is appropriate before God, and I love to the limit of my abilities, and then it happens. See, I'm loving to the limit of, I recently got some news about a person, and I'm concerned about them, but I'm not going to ask God to do anything that God in his majestic divineness never had an intention to do. That's why when I was a pastor in the church, I never had altar prayer. I would call people to come up after a great meeting or something to thank God for us getting an opportunity to love each other. But for me to ask God to change the frame of reference, in other words, is it possible for any of us as human beings to change the very mind of God? Look how long the solar system has been functioning. Look how long the universe has been functioning. Now we can send people up in a rocket just to the outskirts of outer space so that they can see that, and then they can come right back down and land very near the place that they just took off from. Who do you think put this knowledge and this ability in the humans' heads and hearts to do the things that we do? Only the God that created us and that loves us and that is concerned about us. I'm telling you, you don't have to do anything. It's going to happen. But what you have to do is you have to love to the limit that God has given you the ability to do. Then it happens. It happens. Whatever is deemed to happen in the universe is established by divine precepts, concepts, intuitiveness. When a person lives within the guidelines of what is right, what is correct, then that human ability like kicks in for you and carries you through it all from the day you're born to the day you die. I'm in Los Angeles. I was born in the County General Hospital. I'm in Los Angeles. I can go to the building now if I wanted to get in my car and drive to the place where I came from my mother's womb. I was sparked to life in this city, in this region. Oh, that was my mailman. Faithfully. Always on time walking. Keeping warm. That was Destin. He's from New Orleans. I know his name. He has a family. He's working. Man, a black man delivering mail on my street to my house. That's a wonderful thing. God orchestrated it all. When a person lives within the guidelines of what is right and human, this is what the next step is going to be as we step deeply into this webcast. But how can I step into it unless I talk about religious experience? Because a lot of people will come to learn of me and listen to me, and they may think that I'm trying to preach to them to get them to become something or to get them to give me money or something like that. When I was pastoring the church, of course, that's all I did. I was 100% pastor. I taught lessons like this. I spoke like this. I thought like this. I shared it on. But if nobody had a religion experience, there would be no basis for the idea of God. So you gotta have a religious experience, right? Nor would there be any reason for religions to have developed. So what is it that makes an experience a religious experience? I think that's a good question that we need to ask sometime. The 19th century religious writer and philosopher Schleiermacher described religious awareness in terms of feelings of dependence and of seeing finite things in and through the infinite. In other words, you're looking at finite things, things that are here for a little bit and disappear. You have to weigh it next to something that will never disappear. This is what religion does. If I could just make it plain for you. This was rather like a mystical experience, a sudden awareness of a wider dimension which throws light on the ordinary world around us. So the philosopher was trying to express was that religion was not a matter of dogma or logic, but was based upon a direct experience of oneself, of being small and limited against the background of the eternal. And let me tell you, when you think about the universe and the world around us, it's huge. Looking out of my window and see that the rain has come and drenched the earth and cleansed it, it was God's purpose, personified right outside of the window of the Lucy Coleman studio. And I love it. It was also the identification of the self with the whole, a sense of belonging to the whole world. That's what religion does. It brings you connection to it. Feelings like that are destroyed by logic And because somebody would say, man, John, that's illogical what you think about God. There is no God. I got one of my students, he used to take theology with me. And he says, man, I've thought it through. It's just totally illogical. See, and that just becomes a result of reasoning and intuition. Way back in the year 1719, there was a guy named Rudolf Otto, and he wrote this piece called The Idea of the Holy. In this piece that he wrote, he argued that the religious experiences were essentially about the mysterium, he called it the mysterium tremendum, something totally other, unknowable, something that is awesome in its dimensions and power, something which is also attractive and fascinating. He outlined a whole range of feelings, creeping flesh, the fear of ghosts, the sense of something that is uncanny, weird, or eerie. To illustrate that this encounter was something that was quite other than self-threatening, but at the same time more attractive and of supreme value. But however unusual and special such an encounter with the holy might be, it can only be described, he says, by using words that have rational, everyday meaning, language in which, you can't take it literally. See, so the philosopher is going to come up with these ideas why you can't take the thought of God literally and everything like that. But no, I don't agree with that. Let me tell you what I agree with. If I've had an experience with God, which I've had, and I know because it was mine conclusively, and it did not come from anywhere else but the region that I call God, I would challenge anyone to try to talk me out of that experience that I've had. You can't. When God spoke to me, he spoke very plain. If not, and I can prove it because it was in 19, in this space, the office looks quite different. Everything is in a Mac computer, and I'm not going to, last time I let my Mac computer open to the whole wide world internet, some fool sent me a virus and burned my hard drive out. So I had to get another one in there. But I'm basically on the same machine doing what I started to do in the year 2002. Because it was right before 9/11, around August of 2011, that my wife passed away, okay? And I asked God, so what do I do? I'm a pastor without a wife. What do I do? And God literally spoke to my heart the way he did when he called me to preach. You do it this way. Put this way. The same crazy-looking website that you're on right now, listening to this, I put together in that year. And I hope that I got my years right. Because I've been doing this 2002 since I've been doing that. Lucy died in 2001, and I put this thing together in 2002, and I've been doing it ever since, speaking about the one deity that I love and respect, God. and I treat everybody right. I am growing daily by learning how to adapt to the ways of new people that I've learned to be around and to love. Some of the things that happen when I practice Christianity, they forcefully trying to teach me to despise other people, I would never do that. I don't know how to despise other people. There's no reason to do that. I don't think that God despises one person over or under another. I don't think that God particularly, and I know I read in the Bible, it says that Israel was a nation after God's heart, that God chose Israel. And some of the questions come up with the Calvinists, if you know anything about that rendering of doctrine. Well, why did God choose them? Why didn't he choose the Amorites, the Pezerites, the Perizzites? Why didn't he choose those ites? Why did he choose the Israelites? I can't speak that. I can't speak that. I do know this, that, let me go over here and get my water. I drank, my throat is getting congested. I do know this, that when God chose Israel, that it wasn't these white Anglo-looking Israelis that we're looking at over there now. Ooh, the sun is shining so heartily. And it was raining. And I mean, I look towards the west now where the sun is, and there's nothing but that bright. I cannot look directly at the sun. I can't do it. And a beautiful Monday in Los Angeles. I don't know what I'm going to prepare for dinner tonight, but I do hope that it is surely delightful. Let me pause a second. Well, let me say this. Make sure that in everything you do, that you acknowledge God in your way. I can't do it the way my colonizers had me doing it. I can't do it that way. But when I saw this DVD of me today preaching, Paradoxical Lives, I don't know the frame of reference from which I put together the message, what I was going through that week. I was flaunted by a great temptation, and I was trying to share with the people how I dealt with the frustration of me being tempted to be something and do something that would bring disgrace to humanity and God himself. And I just thought that it would be a regular message, and I just watched the whole thing for over an hour. And I got to figure out how to put this up on the internet, because I'd love for you guys to see this. It's a masterpiece. That's what it is. Well, there we have it. Thanks for coming to my site today. And I hope to have more insightful conversations like this in the near future. God bless you.